people to whom Jesus came had literally spent their lives learning their religion and practicing it. In Romans chapter 2, verse 17 through 20, Paul says that they, the Jews, bragged about their relationship to God. They were convinced that they were a guide to the blind, a light to those in darkness, and an instructor to the foolish. And so they expected the Messiah to come and say something like, "Come and join me as we enter the kingdom. You've been faithful, and I'll make you a ruler. You don't really need to make any significant changes in your lives." But when he came, his teaching was shocking. It called for something totally foreign to their thinking. And he demands that they change. They wanted a new, charismatic, young, strong leader. But they wanted him to leave their religion alone because they had that part down. "Blessed are those," he said, "who know that they're sinners, not those who are proud of your righteousness. Blessed are those who don't have a very good self-image, who are not happy with themselves, but they're sad about themselves because of our spiritual beggarliness." We're in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, in the introduction to it. We call it the Beatitudes. And he said, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are they that mourn, for they'll be comforted." And then, as if that's not enough, he added, "Blessed are the meek." Blessed are the meek. I think that one of the reasons that Jesus' teaching finds no greater audience at the time that it was delivered and also today is because it's not big enough. It's not grandiose enough. It doesn't call for the things in our lives that we want to see happen. He talks about little things in our lives, are things that we feel are small. I mean, whenever the world is going to hell in a handbasket, whenever everything is wrong in the world, whenever there are wars all around us, what's the point in talking about how you feel about yourself, how you see yourself? What's the point in talking about meekness? What difference is that going to make in our world? What change is that going to make that we so desperately want to see made? And you look at the audience. They had a glorious background of the Maccabean freedom fighters and independence, and they were all about that. And they were now chafing under the iron hand of Rome. And to add insult to injury, Rome now ruled Palestine through foreigners, Herods, and the people hated them. And they're hoping and praying that the Messiah will come soon. And the zealots are looking for a military leader. And the religious people, the Pharisees and others, are looking for a miraculous leader. And so Jesus comes and he says, "My kingdom is not physical. It's not of this world." And so they don't want anything to do with it. It's not really going to help them in their present situation. And he's going to change the world by his teaching. And they don't like his teaching. They don't like him. They don't like his followers. And later they'll look at a pathetic, beaten, bleeding, humiliated figure and they'll say, "Kill him." And they'll protest vehemently when the Romans put a sign over his head, "Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews." They hated him because he disappointed them. And it began right here. Blessed are the meek. They knew better. Just like we know better. I mean, the only thing that Rome understood was force and violence. And what did meekness have to do with this? He didn't come to rule, but he came to wash feet. And who wants to follow a foot washer? And you can see the result in the first century church when Paul writes to the church at Corinth, and he'll say there are not many wise or many influential or many of noble birth among you. You see, they rejected the king and his teaching. And they still do. Those who enter my kingdom, he says, are not the rich and the powerful and the popular. It's the beggars and the mourners and the meek. And who wants to be a part of that kind of kingdom? The word meek comes from the same root word as poor in spirit and is sometimes used interchangeably, but it's a different word. Poor in spirit focuses on my sinfulness. We've talked about that about 2 weeks ago. It focuses on my spiritual beggarliness. But meekness focuses on God's holiness. It lifts our eyes off of ourselves and it lifts our eyes up. If you'll notice, the poor in spirit is going to result in mourning. But meekness is going to result in something positive. Seeking God's righteousness. Happiness comes first from brokenness. It can't come any other way. True happiness can't come from arrogance. It can't come from what the world says is necessary in order for me to have a good opinion of myself. That kind of happiness can't last. It comes from being realistic about sin and being sorrowful for sin and then a response to God. And that response is meekness. Meekness is submission to God. It is. It is submission to God's will and God's way. It is recognizing in our lives that God's will and God's way is higher than ours, that he knows more than we do. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 1 and 2, I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the calling to which you were called. And then he tells us how that worthy walk looks, with all lowliness and meekness. Really now. Who believes that? Titus 3:2, speak evil of no man. Do not be a brawler, but gentle, showing meekness to all men. Colossians 3:12, therefore put on as the elect of God compassion, kindness, humbleness of mind, meekness. You see, every true citizen of the kingdom of heaven is meek. What does it mean to be meek? Well, the dictionary says, or at least our world will say, that to be meek means to be spineless, to be spiritless. But that's not it. The Greek word means to be mild, to be gentle, to be pliable. The idea is someone who's not argumentative, someone who's kind, someone who's tender, someone who is not filled with self. The Bible, in fact, Jesus himself speaks of his own nature as being meek. Take my yoke upon you and learn of me, for I am meek and lowly in heart. And so the fact that Jesus was meek teaches me something about meekness. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1, by the meekness and gentleness of Christ I appeal to you, Paul writes. Matthew 21:5, behold, the king comes to you meek. Or the NIV says gentle, riding on a donkey. The common idea is that a man is meek when he cannot help himself. When he is powerless, then it behooves you to be meek until you can get your feet back under you again, and then you don't have to be meek anymore. But it's just the better choice whenever you don't have any power. The Lord was not so. That's not why he was meek, and that had nothing to do with his meekness. He could have brought the crowd to its knees any moment he chose with power they had never seen before. Meekness is power under control. It's having the ability to retaliate and choosing not to. It is recognizing that it is the Lord who punishes and not me. Ephesians 4:26, be angry and do not sin. Not angry because you have been insulted. Not angry because your rights have been violated, but because God has been insulted. In 1 Peter chapter 2, if you have your Bibles, I'd like for you to turn there. I'd like to look at this passage for a moment. 1 Peter chapter 2, beginning in verse 21. To this you were called. And he'll say this again in chapter 3, verse 9. Because to this you were called. And what it is you're called to is suffering. To this you were called. Because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example. I'm in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 21. That you should follow in his steps. He committed no sin. No deceit was found in his mouth. You see, Jesus never did anything wrong. So whatever he was accused of, whatever he was punished for, whatever he was criticized for, was false. It was, in fact, a lie. Even the reason for which they put him on the cross, it was a lie. He was mistreated. He was misaccused. But look at verse 23. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. That's the personification of what meekness is right there. That's meekness. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. It says, I'll not defend myself. I will defend God. But I'll never stand up for my own rights. Meekness. Meekness looks like Abraham. God's number one man on the earth. To whom God had given incredible, tremendous promises. And God had promised him that he was going to prosper. And in fact, he became quite rich. And he had this little twerp of a nephew that he had also brought along with him, didn't he? And the herdsmen began to quarrel. And Abraham said, you choose, and I'll take what's left. He didn't insist on his rights. Meekness. Blessed are the meek, for they're going to get it all anyway. They will inherit the earth. They're going to end up getting it all. It's Joseph who's seated before his brothers who have bowed down before him, just like his dreams said so many years before. And as he looked at their backs, bowed in front of him, he said, now boys, I've got a story to tell you. I want to remind you of something that happened a few years ago that maybe you've forgotten. No, that's not what he said. I have to tell you that's what I would have said. I mean, even if I had it in my heart to forgive them and move ahead with what God wanted to, I would want them to pay a little bit, wouldn't you? But he didn't. He had power. He was no coward. And yet there was no retaliation. And it's David standing over a sleeping Saul who has thrown spears at him for no reason to kill him, who has been pursuing his life, and he said, I'm just one step ahead of death. And now he's standing over a sleeping Saul and he has a spear in his hand. And his best friend is saying, stick him just one time. And if you don't want to, let me do it. I would love to do it. And he says, I will not raise my hand against the Lord's anointed. I don't care what he does. I'll never do it. Even if he does, is successful in taking my life. He had the power. He was no coward. But there was no retaliation. You see, they never acted on their own behalf. That's what meekness is. Those in God's kingdom are meek. In Luke chapter 4, verse 16, you have an incident that begins there that Jesus has come home to Nazareth. And it's a really neat thing when a boy's made it really big and he comes home, isn't it? I can remember, I won't name any names, but I came from a little town that had a music star that came from that town. And after he had made a few records, he came back and he would circle our little A&W drive-in where all the teenagers hung out in a stretch limo with, you know, with everything in it and would pull up there and order something to drink so that all the kids could see how well he had done. It's a neat thing when you made it big to come home, isn't it? And so Jesus is back home at Nazareth. And he goes to the synagogue and they hand him a scroll and he stands up and he reads from Isaiah chapter 61. And then he sits down. And he says to them, today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. And so they're amazed at what he has to say. They say, isn't this Joseph's son? They're amazed at the gracious words that come from his lips. And then he says, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, we want to see you dunk the basketball like you did in that game over there in Damascus here. In Capernaum. We want to see your stuff. We've heard a lot about what you can do, and so we want to see it. And he said, but it can't happen here. And he gives them two incidences. And he says, I tell you, no prophet is accepted in his own hometown. I assure you, there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time when the sky was shut for 3.5 years and there was famine throughout the land, yet Elijah was not sent to anybody in Israel, but to a widow in Zarephath in the region of Sidon. And that was those wicked foreigners, those Sidonians. And he says, and there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elijah the prophet, yet not one of them was cleansed except Naaman the foreigner, the Syrian, the captain of a foreign invading army here. And then he says, and they understood, and all the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this, and they got up and drove him out of town and took him to the brow of the hill on which the town was built in order to throw him down the cliff, but he walked away from the crowd and walked away. You see, Jesus' message to them was this: it can't happen here. Because there's not the right attitude. The attitude that permeates here in this hometown where I came from doesn't let God work. There's an attitude of arrogance and pride. And we're full of ourselves. And we don't want anybody coming in doing anything to our religion. We would like to have a young, strong, charismatic leader. But don't be messing with what I believe. And Jesus comes into that. And he says, it's not the rich, and it's not the proud, and it's not the deserving. It's not the self-sufficient. But happy are they who come to God with a broken heart over their sins. No excuses. No defenses. And when you have that, and it develops an attitude of meekness, that I'm not going to retaliate, even when my rights are violated. I'm going to leave it all in God's hands. And God is really, really pleased with that attitude. And God will bless that attitude. And when we make that the attitude of our life, rather than don't tread on me and don't mess with Texas, whenever we make our attitude, you're going to have to answer to God. You don't have to answer to me. You answer to God. Meekness. Happy are the meek, because they're going to end up with it all anyway, because it's in God's hands. And he gives it to whomever he pleases. And those who lay their claim on it, those who are self-righteous, those who don't have this sweet spirit of pliableness, this willingness to be tread on, meekness forces you to come to Jesus for forgiveness. And as we're going to see in our next lesson, and for our righteousness, because we don't have any righteousness of our own. It couldn't happen when Jesus came back to Nazareth. It could happen in that foreign town, but it couldn't happen there. And so my question this morning is, can it happen in the Woodlands? Can it happen in the Woodlands? And more importantly, can it happen in your life? Are you willing to divest yourself of everything that gives you a source and a sense of pride in this world? And let Jesus give you what he wants you to have and make you into what he wants you to be. And are you willing to acknowledge your sinfulness and let go of your righteousness and let him give you his righteousness? You see, that's what he wants to do. Happy are people who develop that attitude while we stand and sing.